NFL week one is here. It's maybe coffins for best ball season and managed league season. But I'm here. I'm Eric Beinfor, at Eric Beinfor on Twitter. I'm super pumped to be bringing in Ben Gretsch, at Yards Per Gretsch on Twitter. We're doing a little kind of DFS season primer today. Not like a DFS 101, but a little look into, you know, maybe some things, some angles that we can take for this NFL season, since we've all been grinding all these drafts and everything all year, and there's so much uncertainty heading into every single NFL season, and maybe some unique perspectives that we can take heading into week one. And Ben is going to be joining me on every Sunday morning. You get to see our two ugly mugs every Sunday morning on rotogrinders.com. So I'm super pumped to be having a conversation now before the season starts with Ben to kind of pick his brain a little bit on some angles we can take early in the season, because I lean on him for some of these player takes. So Ben, thanks for joining me, and I'm pumped for week one to be here.
Yeah, me too, man. I mean, like, Sunday morning's always rough. Everyone, a lot of people know I write the Stealing Signals article. So for me, you know, Sunday through Monday through Tuesday is always my roughest period. So I was like, oh man, the Sunday morning show, when you guys asked, like, oh, I don't know if I can do it. But getting the opportunity to do it with you is like the biggest pull, because you are so sharp on the, like, I always think of it as like DFS and then football analysis skills as being sort of separate. You're so sharp on all the DFS skills. Those are maybe not my sharpest levels, but I think you and I are going to complement really well. I'm super excited to talk down the slate every Sunday morning, and then, you know, kind of sharpen my lineups before lock. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And then, yeah, today, you said we're going to talk a little about some early season edges to find, big picture stuff, right?
Yeah, exactly. And thank you for the compliments. But I was really excited to bring you on. When I knew I was doing the Sunday morning show, I was kind of pitching you because of exactly what you said. I'm biased, obviously. We're both biased, but I do think it's a good combination of not even like just like skill sets, but like methodologies, the way that we think about things. You know, I have my football takes and you have your like game theory takes, but like, you know, I trust you for some of the player type stuff, you know, even in, obviously everybody knows I've been in the best ball streets and you have too, and in the season long streets. But, you know, listening to people like you on some of these specific player takes, and then hopefully applying some of my more like DFS mindset to things, I think really it will be really like a informational and really helpful kind of blend of methodologies on Sunday mornings as people are kind of polishing up lineups. But
yeah, we're gonna, like you said, we're gonna find some stuff that wins people money for sure.
I think so too. And so with that being said, week one is such an interesting kind of dynamic where, you know, DFS has become such a projection focused game, and salaries are always just going to be the softest in week one, right? The contests come out way ahead of time, and even in the early part of the season, right? Like week two might even be the bigger edge over week one, because we're going to get these crazy overreactions, right? Somebody goes off in week one, or somebody has a role we didn't perceive in week one, and then week two, you know, that everybody piles on, you know, that guy that we didn't perceive, and then maybe week three is the same thing. So the thought process around kind of this conversation is, what are some of these early season things that we can start to look at now before we really, really start? You know, Sunday, we're going to dive into the slate, right? All the players and all the salaries and stacks and all that fun stuff. But what are some things that maybe we've taken from this entire summer that we've been talking about all these players, you know, for 5 months? What are some of the things that we can take into the season, whether it's undervalued offenses, right? Maybe some breakout players that aren't going to necessarily project that well early in the season. And so the first thing that really kind of comes to my mind when we start to talk about that is basically like younger players. I think this season in particular, there is like maybe the most interesting group of rookie and second year players that I can remember. Maybe I'm just biased because I've been so in the weeds on these guys.
Last year, I don't think you're biased. Last year we had, I believe it was 19 wide receivers in the first three rounds and a really high number of running backs, just a ton. So we have a ton of guys going into year two, like just more skill position players hit last year in the first 2 days of the draft by teams thinking that was a really strong class. And then this year we have a lot more really, it's another really interesting, strong rookie class. And so I don't think you're wrong. I think it actually is a really strong year one, year two class right now.
And so, you know, not to dive too much into like week one salaries, I will be really fascinated to see like week two salaries, like particularly on DraftKings, where we were talking a little bit before the show, you know, like all these rookies are like min priced or close to min priced. You know, like even we were talking about the wide receivers, right? Elijah Moore, Rondale Moore, Terrace Marshall, all these guys are min priced. Even the Marquez Callaway is the guy who is probably going to get a little bit of steam. He's close to min priced. Javonte Williams is min priced. You know, there's all these young guys. Laviska Shenault is 5K, right? If he breaks out like we think he's going to break out, 5K is just an absolutely laughable price. There's all of these guys, right? I'm naming specific names, but there's like, I don't know, there's probably 20 of these guys that we could legitimately make a case should probably be the stone chalk if they break out in a way that we think that they're going to break out. But like, they can't all be owned, right? And I actually think very few of them are going to be owned because people are viewing it kind of like you said, we're latched on to projections and more certain situations. And some of these guys are in, you know, and Elijah Moore is in a fairly uncertain situation. It's more of a bet on talent. And so what are your just kind of like overall thoughts in terms of early season DFS as it applies? I know you're on those guys for season long, which are early, you know, Elijah Moore, Rondale Moore, et cetera. Are those kind of guys you're latching onto to kind of bet on talent early on?
Yeah. I mean, that's like one of my favorite parts of the early part of the season. I mean, obviously we're trying to find, you know, smart ways to gain leverage, right? On ownership, on thinking probabilistically. That's one reason you and I want to work together is we both think very probabilistically. So like, even if we have sort of different skill sets, we're going to jive on that kind of thing. You know, I know obviously enough about DFS strategies and things that to understand that what we're trying to build is strong probabilistic bets based on not just projections and price, but obviously ownership as well. The thing that I found over the last several years in the early part of the season is these young guys are just such strong bets in that sense because people aren't going to be on them yet. The projections aren't going to be on them yet. It's a really easy way to gain leverage on, you know, a lot of the sharper DFS players that are going to be out there looking at projections, finding ways to leverage projections. If you want to build leverage off that, there are some really good upside young bets. And then I think there are some that are good and then some that are maybe not as good. One of the important things with young players is understanding that their prospect profiles still matter a ton. I talk about this a lot, like in my Stealing Signals columns and stuff, this idea of the long view. For young players, what's hard to keep in mind is like what we've seen at the NFL level, even the ones going into year two, very small sample. And we should consider what they did in college as also part of that sample, kind of. And so that was a big reason, like a lot of people know I was on AJ Brown really heavy last year. It was not just that he was awesome as a rookie. It was also that he had basically a perfect prospect profile in college. And DK Metcalf was so good as a rookie. It's kind of like this Jamar Chase thing where, like, look, these guys played together. Chase was better than Justin Jefferson. Now that we've seen Justin Jefferson come out and be really good at the NFL level, it makes you think even higher of Chase. That's where we were at last year with A.J. Brown and Metcalf. It's like, well, A.J. Brown and Metcalf, when they played like 20 games together, I think, in college, Brown had more than double the receptions. He was like a way more dominant player from a volume perspective and all that. That was really important. So when we're looking at the different profiles of the rookies and second players, it's not just going after the young guys. It's obviously the smart bets, the ones that we were on for season long and all those types of things. I actually, you know, we were just talking, we're recording on Tuesday. I haven't even looked at the week one matchups a lot. I've been grinding a bunch of like high stakes season long drafts. So I don't have any like great names at first, but we were talking just before the show about Elijah Moore, and you were saying people are going to be probably a little bit more on Corey Davis, who's priced up. I think from a probabilistic perspective, Davis looked good in the preseason. I love this stat, targets per out run. And the funny thing in the preseason is he only ran like 15 routes and he got targeted like, you know, I don't know the exact number, but he got targeted like 70% of his routes is what it was. But I do think probabilistically, especially early in the year, there's plenty of opportunity for Elijah Moore to basically be better than him right away. I think there's a huge overlap in what they could be right out of the gate. You know, we got to make sure Elijah Moore's fully healthy and totally running at full speed and not being kind of brought along slowly. But the fact that you can get a guy that's that cheap that could basically just be a star immediately and also may go very low owned is absolutely something that you got to consider, and especially in like larger tournaments and things like that. I mean, it's just it's the way to play it. Look at Justin Jefferson early last year. I think it was week three where he really started breaking out. Calvin Ridley a couple years ago had the monster week two after like getting shut out in week one. No catches, I think, in week one. And then he had like a 3-touchdown week two. These guys are going to be a little inconsistent early, but we don't really care about that. We're looking for, you know, the booms.
Yeah. The Elijah Moore thing is also super fascinating because Jamison Crowder has a little bit of uncertainty around his week one. You know, he's on the COVID list. And I don't know, you know, we don't get a lot of information. Eventually we find out kind of on the vaccination status of the guys, depending on when they come back, but we don't get a lot of, you know, confirmation around guys' statuses, at least not now. I mean, we'll know before, like, we talk on Sunday, obviously, about Jamison Crowder. But, you know, if you remove somebody like Jamison Crowder from the situation, you know, the concerns about how much is Elijah Moore going to play, you know, how healthy is he or whatever, start to remove a little bit. And I just think I went through, I tweeted about this. I went through and I did. Today was actually the first day I, like, really looked at, you know, who's playing who and the prices of all these guys. And I went through and I just found myself, like, that's why I wanted to talk about this first. These younger players, you know, first year, second year players are the guys that, like, I want to tag. Like, that's all I want to tag is, like, all the Rondale Moore, Elijah Moore, Terrace Marshall, Laviska Shenault, you know, all those guys. Those are all the guys that I want to tag because they're so cheap. And I look at, like, our ownership projections are up in Lineup HQ, and they're, like, no one is chalky either. Kyle Pitts is another guy that I tagged, and he is a little bit more popular. But same thing, we don't have this certainty around their role. I mean, I guess we have a little certainty around Kyle Pitts's role, but even then, we saw he played two snaps in the preseason. So, like, we don't have that much certainty. So all these things are just keeping the ownership in check on all these guys. Like, somebody else tweeted about this, I think, that it was almost like a gift from God that Elijah Moore kind of got dinged up early in camp, and we didn't get to see him mm-hmm. in the preseason. Because if he came out and did what Corey Davis did, his week one DFS ownership would be like, what? I mean, over 50%. He's 3K. He's min priced on DraftKings. And if he was stealing those targets that Corey Davis got, we would be having a very different conversation than what we're having today. So I couldn't agree more on guys like him. I'm certain we're going to be talking about, like, Elijah Moore and those guys more on Sunday. But was there, but, like, wrapping up kind of that rookie second year type guy, was there anybody else that kind of jumped out to you just in your kind of, you know, or just off the cuff, basically, like, rookie second year guys that you had already kind of thought you wanted to target early in the DFS season?
Yeah, I mean, I'm coming around on Jerry Jeudy, who I was a little bit down on. I don't know if you mentioned T. Higgins. I love Laviska Shenault. Any of those types of guys, I think one of the things I try to remember in DFS, even though it is a weekly game, is – everyone is paying attention to the weekly trends. And there is, I think, an edge in keeping this long view mindset. One of the things that was relevant from both of the Justin Jefferson and Calvin Ridley points is those guys went on to become sustainably great players, and they're both going in the first and second round of drafts this year. AJ Brown, same point, you know. So the idea is, like, you're not just targeting, you know, anyone. You're trying to target guys that you think could be, from a seasonal perspective, first or second round picks next year, you know, wide receivers that can be superstars. So T. Higgins is one that I absolutely believe that about. Jamar Chase is an incredible prospect, had drops issues in the preseason. They might be incentivized to get him, you know, 5-6 catches in week one right away. Maybe he makes an explosive play. Try to just put that to bed, you know, what happened in the preseason. Yeah. Some of these guys that have the types of profiles that people like me, like you, and in the best ball streets we're talking about targeting in season long, I think are also very much worth considering in the early part of DFS. And a big point I would make again is once these guys break out, they continue it. It's not chasing guys that you don't believe in long term. It's chasing guys that you think are potential future superstars.
And people do the opposite in DFS. I get really excited for those first couple weeks of the season. You know, sometimes it doesn't break your way, and that's just how it goes. But this week one is also fascinating because usually we get the salaries come out super early and some guy gets hurt. right? Last year, I believe Miles Sanders missed week one. Because I was looking back today at the week one slate, and Boston Scott was like 75% owned or whatever, because he was minimum price. You know, we get things like that happen like every year, and it really hasn't happened this year. You know, Gus Edwards is not on the main slate. James Robinson was actually priced up already, you know, from the before. Like, I guess maybe I'm just dumb. I didn't think James Robinson should be like 6,500, but he is like, you know, extremely expensive already. So we don't have, other than these guys that we're talking about, the Elijah Moores, the rookies, like super, super underpriced guys. So it's going to be really fascinating to see kind of where the market latches onto. If it is I do think T. Higgins is definitely like maybe the one guy in this whole conversation that is probably gonna garner a fair bit of ownership. So I apologize to you in advance. You may not be able to just smash 100% T. Higgins, because I think the market is on him. But I'm already like looking forward to that Galaxy Brain conversation on Sunday, where it's like, look, we both like T. Higgins more, but like Jamar Chase, because he dropped all those passes in preseason,
yeah,
be like 2%. It's going to be like 2% owned, and it's an awesome game. They played the Vikings.
He's probably the best wide receiver prospect on paper since Amari Cooper. I mean, that matters.
Yeah,
he's a freak athlete. He didn't play last year, but he was amazing 2 years ago in college. Better than Jefferson in the same offense. He's playing with Burrow again. I mean, yeah, he wasn't dropping passes from Burrow, really, was he? I can't actually remember, but I don't think Burrow was playing a lot in the preseason, right? So maybe yeah, when Burrow comes back, everything will be perfect.
I mean, he even came out with a quote. He addressed the drop thing and was basically just like, yeah, I think it maybe was a little bit of rust. He also was really interesting, if you really want to get your hand in the dirt. The NFL football is different than the college football. And I think he was in his own head a little bit. And just like thinking about, you know, he dropped a couple balls, and then, you know, he is probably a little rusty. And so it's just all these things started, and he's human. What is he? 21, 20, you know, he's a young kid. Like, where Jesus, I think about shit, you know, way, way less important than what this kid is thinking about every single day. And so I just think those kinds of things, right? Jamar, maybe he does drop three more balls this week. I don't know, but those kinds of things are the things I think we should be talking about as we head into week one.
And I think, you know, that could very well happen. Again, we're thinking about like range of outcomes and probabilities. That could very well happen. I do think, in a point that I wrote about right after these drops and his ADP started to plummet, was it has almost no effect on what we should expect from him in year one. First of all, drops basically don't matter. They're just more a signifier that a guy's getting targets. And Jamar Chase is going to get targets is sort of the point. Like, they want him to succeed. They went out and drafted him fifth overall. This is not – I mean, they took him over Penei Sewell. That's a huge discussion point. It's going to be a discussion point into the future. Like, the teams that draft players that high are incentivized to get a lot out of them right away. That's why you're talking about Kyle Pitts potentially garnering ownership right away. Now, at the same time, the flip side of this point, I would say, is when a guy like Pitts is garnering a lot of ownership, I'm probably going to be off a little bit. Like, if there's an opportunity to then – be off of that for maybe a more stable projection from a veteran that's priced similarly, I'm actually going to probably lean towards the veteran, because these rookie blowups will happen in a couple of these early weeks. There will be some big weeks from some of these guys and these young guys, second year players that we kind of didn't foresee. And I think they're going to be keys. At the same time, they're going to be inconsistent. Like I said, there's going to be the big story with rookies, especially, is that they gain snaps throughout their rookie season. Almost all of them. This happened with AJ Brown and DJ Moore and Juju Smith-Schuster. There's a million guys, right? There's a few that play right away. But Pat Corain had a great article earlier this offseason over at NBC talking about when rookies smash, they still don't end up running as many routes as a normal starting wide receiver. They're always a little bit lower, and they're smashing because of efficiency. Rookies are just sort of held back at least a little bit right away, right? And Chase probably will be no exception, even though he is an incredible prospect, especially because we're talking about rust and these things. Like, they're going to give him some plays off. They're going to give him some snaps off. They're going to do some things situationally where they go with two wide receivers and they go with Higgins and Boyd. They got two guys that they really like that they can do in those sets. So I think that's something you have to keep in mind with rookies as well. They're not going to be guys that are out there running a full set of routes. And so if you do start jumping up to these really high ownership percentages, I might be willing to fade in those spots and be like, okay, well, this is actually one where this guy could, you know, have a goose egg, basically. I mean, that can happen with a lot of rookies early in the year as well. So it's a high a high variance play for any of these types of young players, even when you really like the player on any given week, and we already know pass catchers almost by default are going to be high variance. These are going to be a subset of them that are running fewer routes and we're relying more on efficiency. It's going to be very high variance. The point then is be very ownership, you know, what's the word? Conscious, whatever, conscious. Conscious. Yeah. Be willing to play the ones that are low ownership and then also be willing to get off of the ones that everyone are coalescing around.
And you know, so let's use Kyle Pitts as an example. If he does pick up, and I do think he will, I think he's going to be really popular in week one and maybe the first part of the season until his salary. If he is good, you know, maybe he does bust week one and then week two is when we really get to smash Kyle Pitts. But you can play these guys, but you need to do it in a smart manner, right? Like if you want to play Kyle Pitts, maybe, okay, so they play the Eagles, right? It's Falcons, Eagles. Maybe he's your bring back on a Jalen Hurts, Devonta Smith, another rookie, another potential breakout type of guy, or Jalen Rager.
Another second year, a little bit more of a distressed, you know, lower owned player. Probably, I'd imagine Devonta Smith's probably going to be projecting higher than the Jalen Rager ownership wise.
And Rager's also super fascinating because he's a little bit above min priced. Again, I'm referencing DraftKings because that's where I that's where my brain usually goes pricing wise. But same thing, you know, now, okay, Jalen Hurts is going to be like 3% and then Jalen Rager is going to be 1% or whatever. So if you stack those guys and you want to have a bring back with Kyle Pitts, you know, and he's beautiful by all means. But if you're playing, you know, I don't know who the chalky stack is even.
I actually love that. I'm going to make a lineup like that. I'm going to add Ridley to it. I'm already thinking like, well, you don't need Ryan, but you'd have Ridley and Pitts. You need Hurts with just probably one receiver. You got the rushing element. That's a really fun little build.
I've been gal-braining all these. I built like 400 teams today. You know, you're just like clicking around. You get so excited, right, for all these guys. And that game is super fascinating. But it's also like, okay, Pitts is going to be chalky. And then, like, I don't know, people are going to pay up for Devontae or Tyreek or whatever. Well, then Ridley creates your leverage off of Pitts, and he's leveraged, you know. So you just start gal-braining all these crazy, crazy different ideas. So the team kind of discussion leads me into the next thing I think that I was going to ask you about, which is there a breakout team or an offense or I guess vice versa, you know, just like a general team take, maybe there's a team you want to avoid that maybe you think people will be on either side of that spectrum that you're thinking about, you know, again, off the top of the head.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a few. I think Washington's going to be better. I mean, I understand that they've been sort of buzzy. People have talked about them, but I think they're going to be a lot better than people realize. I think Fitzpatrick is better than people realize. He's so fun as this this Fitzmagic persona. I don't think people realize that that's actually a symbol that he's actually become a lot better as a quarterback. A lot of the stuff he's done in these like late game situations, smart aggressiveness, I would call it. I think he like legitimately just got better with age. He's one of these quarterbacks that is like playing his best football, you know, right before his physical capacity is going to start declining at some point. And it might decline this year, but you know, he's 38 or something. He's very old, but I really do think he's playing the best football. He was never like this as the player that he's been over the last maybe 3 or 4 years, even into his mid 30s, all those years that he was playing as sort of a journeyman, Titans and Texans and wherever else he played, Bills a long time ago. What he's done with the Bucs and then in Miami and then what I think he might have the opportunity to do in Washington, very different quarterback, frankly, in my opinion. So I'm excited about Washington as a team to target early. There's some teams that we know to be exciting that are also going undervalued or overlooked. Something, go back to a podcast that I've been doing this offseason, Stealing Bananas with Sean Siegel. Early on, we talked about these massive trends, you know, the big changes we've seen as analytics have been seeping their way more and more into the NFL and what this will mean for fantasy. One of the things we sort of got to and decided was that in a big picture sense, we think the gap between sort of the haves and the have-nots is only going to widen. You have teams like the Bills and the Chiefs that were so willing to throw on early downs last year, that early down pass rate, really important stat for fantasy value, for the value of the offense, both because passing is like better than running for fantasy. You get, you know, you get the receptions, you get bigger plays, you get more touchdowns, you get more scoring, even incompletions stop the clock. We don't just want one guy carrying the ball and then the clock running. That's horrible. But both because of that, but also because it's more efficient. It is like the, you know, the analytically sound thing is we should be passing more. And so it makes offenses better when they're making those smart decisions. And so when we talk about that, we talk about the aggressiveness on fourth downs, talk about all those types of things. The teams that are doing that are obviously worth targeting. The teams that are not are going to be huge stayaways and scary offenses, and offenses we want to avoid. It's a big reason teams are people are on Dallas and Cincinnati and all these teams, because when Burrow and Dak were healthy last year, they were showing those tendencies. But the team that I think, you know, embodies this more than any other is the Bills. Like, I want to attack the, it's almost like, I feel like going a little undervalued. I've talked about Stephon Diggs could be the wide receiver one this year, potentially should be. He led the NFL in receptions and yards last year. The volume was massive, and he was actually a lot better in the second half of the year than the first half of the year. And we know that long-term trends, when a receiver changes teams, they're kind of sometimes a little bit slow to latch on with the new team. I think he could have a better year this year than he did last year in receptions and yards, where he led the league. And then the only issue is touchdowns. He finished with 8 TDs. He finished as the wide receiver 3 in most scoring, because Adams and Hill both had like averaged over a touchdown per game. But I think Diggs can definitely get his TDs up as well. He had a couple in the postseason. He had more in the second half of the year. You know, people will argue with split stats. I think it's relevant here because Diggs was on a new offense and sort of assimilating to a new role. They get rid of John Brown. They have issues with Gabe Davis. His biggest target competition is 2 30-plus-year-olds, Emmanuel Sanders and Cole Beasley. Beasley was pretty good last year too, but they're so worried about him. We keep hearing about Emmanuel Sanders all offseason. Emmanuel Sanders' last 1,000-yard season, or I think it's 900-yard season, was 2016. Like, this guy has not been consistently productive. Diggs is going to eat this year, and this is a team that's going to throw on every down. So the Bills are the type of offense I want to be targeting, because they do things intelligently. They do things the analytically focused way. And you talk about like ranges of outcomes. We know they're going to be productive in that sense, right? Like, game script be damned, you know, non-obvious passing situations be damned. They're going to throw the ball no matter what. And that's something that's like raises the floor and raises the ceiling. So those types of teams, the Chiefs, obviously, I mean, we all know that, but it's not like the Bills are going underrated. I just think the extent to which that gap is going to be there for those really forward-thinking teams isn't being emphasized enough. And I really want to make a point to target those teams.
I mean, I could not possibly agree more. I knew who you were saying right away when you were like these, you know, analytically focused, kind of forward-thinking, innovative teams. And that's exactly how I feel about the Bills. There was part of this offseason, you know, Stephon Diggs is a first, second round pick in season long leagues. You know, Josh Allen is a fifth round pick, whatever. They're not going like completely overlooked. However, also the rest of the offense is like free. And like, again, using like our managed leagues and best ball like brain to think about it that way, right? And I know, I get it. Cole Beasley is kind of a mess on Twitter or whatever, and with his personal life. And Emmanuel Sanders has flaws, right? Maybe they don't love Gabe Davis. They have a running back split. I get all that. But we have a situation, in my opinion, where what you said was perfect. The kind of the cream of the crop is going to continue to be more of the cream of the crop. And the, you know, the boomers, the old football guys, they're going to get left in the dust even more. And I feel more confident about the Bills than maybe any team in the NFL doing the things that I need them to do for DFS, particularly as it relates to the passing game. And I think there was a little bit of narrative kind of early in the season, like they're going to regress type of thing. And I feel like that's the wrong way to view it. I think the view is, maybe they do regress, maybe they're not the Bills of last year, but how I think we can win with this team is look at what they did in the preseason. They did not run ever. Like, and I know it's the preseason, whatever, like I get, we can like write some of that off, but that's the potential that we're talking about a team that might run twice in a half. They literally might throw like up, they're winning, losing, doesn't matter. They might throw 55
times. And they understand that Josh Allen can run once they drop back. Like, they've built this offense around that. they're not dumb. You know, people are like, oh, like, where's the balance? Well, when you have Josh Allen, that he is your balance. Like, he's going to – you're saying they might drop back they might hand off twice all half. They might drop back every snap except two, basically. They'll still end up with 12 rush attempts because he'll – you know, maybe not 12, 8, because he'll scramble 6 times. I mean, and that's why you want to be on Josh Allen. But, yeah, no, that is a a great point. I mean, I think the fact that they're so free is ridiculous too. The Bills running backs, they can't score touchdowns because they only scored 7 TDs last year, the main two. The team scored 56. I would lay a lot of a strong number that they will score more than 7 TDs this year if the Bills score 56 touchdowns again. I don't think that's really likely at all. Their backup tight ends, Tyler Croft was there. Lee Smith combined for 5 TDs. Isaiah McKenzie had 5 touchdowns. Allen rushed for 8 or something again. They had all these really like kind of creative plays down in the red zone. I think we're going to see a little bit more straightforward stuff from them. They put all that stuff on tape now. Those running backs are going to get some opportunities to score too, and that might be a way to leverage this offense too. Especially if you're not playing a Bills pass catcher in like basically any lineup, you probably like we know that they're going to be aggressive, right? And so you probably want to consider throwing Zach Moss into a lineup and be like, okay, well maybe he gets 2 TDs, you know. And no one thinks that can happen. They think the Bills running backs have no upside whatsoever. So there's a lot of ways to play offenses like this, but just the fact that we can kind of identify the teams that have so much sort of upside, so much appeal. And there are several teams. The other thing I would say is that we want to look at teams that could be the next version of that. One team that I'm really interested in, really excited about, sort of a we'll see, but the Panthers look pretty sexy. Last year, we were excited about Matt Rhule, Joe Brady coming in from LSU, where Joe Burrow and all the, you know, Jamar Chase, Justin Jefferson, Terrace Marshall, they were amazing, right, at LSU 2 years ago. We were all talking about the Panthers, new coaching staff, could be young, innovative, forward-thinking staff coming from the college ranks. They had Teddy Bridgewater last year. Teddy Bridgewater limits some of those things. There's a lot of opportunities that were missed last year, down the field especially. I don't think Sam Darnold is necessarily amazing. I don't even know for sure if he's better than Teddy Bridgewater. I do think he basically can't be worse for them trying to implement what they wanted to do than what Bridgewater was last year, because Bridgewater was taking so many just underneath checkdowns, down 14 points in the fourth quarter, throwing to Mike Davis 100 times. We're not going to – Darnold basically can't be worse than that in terms of trying to execute those things. And then just the fact that it's year two for these coaches, they might have some more stuff. We saw some of it in the preseason. Last year, I think they really badly misused DJ Moore as basically just a pure deep threat, and he was still very efficient. He had a much lower ADOT his first 2 seasons, was very productive in the shallow area. In the preseason, we saw them treat him more as sort of the go-to target on a 3rd and 5, on a 4th and 1. Like, they had him run quick outs. He got easy completions, easy catches. And what they have now is they've let Curtis Samuel go, and they have a big slot in Terrace Marshall, who you noted. They're going to use him more vertically. That might allow them to use DJ Moore more in the shallower part of the field. It gives them more ability to mix up different route depths and things. Robbie Anderson, another really good receiver, obviously. You get Christian McCaffrey back. There's just a lot of elements here where if Darnold is like, I just hope he's like half decent. If he's half decent, this offense could be really explosive. If they're also willing to embrace some of these, you know, forward thinking ideas.
I also hope he's half decent because I've drafted far too much Sam Darnold in best ball. And every time I post the team on Twitter, I love to do it. I don't post the like actually really good teams. I post the teams on Twitter that I know people are going to hate, right? Like post the Tua Sam Darnold at quarterback with crappy running backs, and everybody just gets triggered, right? But I was so like, part of me is a little upset with you because I wanted to bring up the Panthers. That's my pet team this year. That is the team. Like, if the Panthers and the 49ers, but everybody likes the 49ers. That's not really anything crazy. If the Panthers suck and Sam Darnold is significantly worse than Teddy Bridgewater, like, I'm just going to hold my L, and it is what it is. But I see them, you said it again perfectly, as the next potential Bills. Everybody has written off Sam Darnold. Everybody was out on Josh Allen, right? Not a good passer, you know, can't throw accurately, has this cannon for an arm. But he's just sort of an athlete back there playing quarterback. Next thing we know, he gets a brilliant offensive coordinator in Brian Daboll, who comes in and is installing an innovative offense, and they get him weapons. They get him Stephon Diggs. John Brown may actually have not been a very good weapon. We thought he was a decent pickup. And I think maybe actually the offense just made John Brown into a relevant weapon, right? Cole Beasley is fine, but like, I think the Panthers are like the absolute perfect team. If you want to do the whole, who is this year's Bills? It is absolutely the Panthers. The other little tiny little thing, again, not trying to draw everything from the preseason, they did what the Bills did in the one game that they trotted out their starters for the whole half, their last preseason game. I believe they threw it 26 times in the first half. They basically – now CMC did not play. Chuba was playing running back. But they basically did what the Bills do. They just – it was all passing. They used DJ – again, like you said, they used DJ Moore kind of in the short game. They used the short passing game to be their running game. And Darnold was really good. Because shocker, even if he's not very good, when you have DJ Moore and Robbie Anderson and Terrace Marshall and a brilliant offensive coordinator, and you're playing efficient football, even Sam Darnold can be good. And so that's an offense I couldn't possibly agree more. Super quick spoiler alert: I have Sam Darnold and DJ Moore tagged on Line of HQ. I'm sure that we will be discussing them also on Sunday. But I'm very excited. They also play the Jets, and it's just like the only thing I'm worried about for week one is that that game picks up a lot of steam, because it's so it is kind of obvious as like a cheap play. Well, everybody's going to play CMC, so that's where it's kind of interesting. Like if you fade CMC and you play Darnold to DJ Moore with Elijah Moore or something as a bring back, I think there's a lot of leverage opportunities in something like that. Also because I think the Jets defense is going to be an absolute abomination. So that's a fun week.
Yeah, and they might not – I mean, CMC, we might not see – a full workload in week one necessarily. Didn't play in the preseason, right? I don't think he had a touch or a snap in the preseason. So we could see a little bit of Chuba. I mean, they are thin at running back as well. They let everyone go, and then they claimed Royce Freeman. But yeah, I mean, I don't think that would be a crazy leverage point. For all we know, CMC could lose a little bit of value this year compared to last year. But I mean, even last year, he played three games. He averaged over 30 points per game. Like, and 2019 was obviously just world wrecking. So he's going to be a discussion every week, I think, again, whether or not you just jam in CMC here or try to find ways to sort of build leverage off of CMC.
So CMC is the next point I wanted to bring up. And not even just him, but, for a long time, we've had like the, team jam them in is what, people would say with, it used to be like Le'Veon Bell and David Johnson. And now it's obviously CMC. I think people are going to do that now. We have Dalvin, right? We have Alvin Kamara in the nut scenario now. Obviously, I'm sure you saw they let Latavius Murray go today. And so we have these kind of elite running backs now where I think the field is going to be really, really heavy on those guys. And I'm not saying that's wrong. But one thing that I've kind of been doing, again, mainly in like from a best ball portfolio perspective or managed leagues, the logic being kind of like you talked about with like the Bills and we talked about with the Panthers and these teams starting to innovate and play football a little bit differently than the last 5 years, like even the last 2 years with passing. But I think that also possibly relates to the running back position. And I'm not certain that even the CMC types are going to be the 100% snap players moving forward. And I'm certainly going to be wrong about certain guys with that, right? Joe Mixon might play every snap. Dalvin might play every snap, whatever. But I would rather be out ahead of a trend like that where maybe Chuba is playing 20% of the snaps. And like, I love CMC and he's still going to be very good. And he's still, your number one overall pick in your season long league. And you're not going to be upset with having him on your team. But from a DFS perspective, if I'm paying 10K for a guy, I do kind of need, the 40, 50 point ceilings. I don't, 28, 30 points isn't even necessarily getting it done for me with CMC. So do you have any thoughts on something like that? It doesn't even have to be that trend. Maybe you have a different view on that, but I'm kind of thinking about those kinds of things where Diggs, like you said, Diggs is never leaving the field. And we think, this team is going to pass a ton. That gives Diggs the ceiling that's just incredible, right? Davante Adams, Tyreek Hill, Justin Jefferson, the list goes on and on with these wide receivers. I think there could be a trend where the running backs, at the high end, it's still what everybody's latching onto because that's what we've done for so long. But we might see a little bit of a flippening in terms of fantasy value.
Yeah, it's interesting. That point you made about maybe not quite as massive running back workloads, it does seem kind of cyclical at times. I remember back in like 2015, it seemed like we were headed that way. And we have seen the really high carry counts continue to sort of fall, like the number of backs who hit X amount of carries every year. is starting to fall. What happened over the last several years is that we got this rise of the Uber back, right, as it's been called, or whatever you want to call it. But these backs that can add so much receiving value. With CMC, like, to your point, he could play 80% of the snaps, but he can still catch 10 balls and just bury it. You know, yeah. I mean, so the receiving is the killer. I have no issue fading Derrick Henry. I have no issue even fading guys with some receiving role, like a Zeke Elliott or something. But the ones that are always going to be really hard for me are McCaffrey. Alvin Kamara could absolutely bury you early in the season. We could see one of these games, like the 6-touchdown one he had late last year. He's always had a big goal line role. They don't have a lot of other pieces right now in place, frankly. They just let Latavius Murray go. Tony Jones has looked good. Tony Jones, not a particularly great prospect profile or background. Could be a solid player. It's guys like him can certainly play roles, and sometimes guys just don't get opportunities at lower levels, whatever. I'm not writing him off necessarily, but I do think the fact that they moved on from Latavius suggests that we might actually see the most, the least amount of a committee that we've seen in Kamara's career. They've always used multiple backs. We might see the most sort of lead back type scenario that we've seen in New Orleans under Sean Payton. Yeah. Basically ever, you know, going all the way back to like Deuce McAllister, you know, like very, very early. They've been using committees with all sorts of guys ever since then. Kamara could be a guy who just suddenly is getting, 250 carries, which he's never even really approached. And then also catching 80 to 100 balls. Now we also lost Drew Brees. There's other issues there. So there are ways this could play differently, but I think there's a few key guys at the top. You know, Austin Eckler's another one that I'm really struggling with lately because was kind of a little down on him. Not sure how much they'd use him on the early downs, but Los Angeles is now really thin in their passing game from sort of a low key perspective, I guess. But I thought Tyron Johnson was their best shot at a wide receiver three that could actually earn significant targets. Jalen Guyton had one of the lowest targets per route run of any wide receiver in the NFL last year. Just sort of a route runner. Josh Palmer could be the answer to this question, but a lot of people like, but I am not necessarily as high on him. Not a great producer in college. Tough to expect him to come in year one and be great. Mike Williams, very consistently average at drawing targets, basically. Not a good separator. So if something were to happen to Keenan Allen, Austin Eckler's going to, like, honestly, and then they don't have Hunter Henry anymore. You have Jared Cook and Donald Parham. Austin Eckler may not get as much of a rushing workload as people want, but he honestly might get 150 targets. Like, he might break running back target volume records. It could be insane. For him. So there's some of those guys like that I'm going to be wary of fading, certainly. But I do think your point is interesting and one worth considering that, it could happen to a lot of guys. It could happen to like Jonathan Taylor, one of my favorite dudes, right? Like where he like gets fewer carries per game than he was getting late last year because Marlon Mack's back and Hines is there. They just want to keep guys healthy. Who knows? You know, you have 17 weeks. That's a big reason that could start to happen more. Teams planning for the playoffs, they might not want to ride these guys quite as hard for, you know, especially if they're counting into the playoffs for 20, 21 games it could be. You know?
Yeah, I think it's just something like kind of to monitor. Like, would anyone be surprised? I here's maybe a hot take. I would be more surprised if the Saints came out and did not like really, really feature Alvin Kamara, which is not something I would have said even just a few weeks ago.
Right.
Then the Panthers came out and had CMC in old, 98% of snaps, CMC getting, a million targets. CMC was the cheat code because he's a wide receiver two and a running back one, all in one person that you get to play. You know, you get to play for 9,500 or 10K on DraftKings. I wouldn't be that surprised if Chuba came in and played a role, right? And again, CMC is going to be tremendously valuable. You're going to look at my cash game lineup on week one on Sunday, and it's going to have, spoiler alert, it's going to have CMC.
That's going to be a popular build. You mentioned it. He's going to, him and Kamara, and like the fact that these receivers are so cheap, like you could just jam in. It's certainly for week one, you can jam them in. Sorry, I cut off your point about CMC.
No, but I just am trying to think about those kind of things more early. Like, we're going to get to week 10 or week 12 and we're kind of going to know what everybody's role is, right? There's not a lot of uncertainty around, like we've talked about Jamar Chase. We talked about Elijah Moore. We're going to basically know what they are at that point. They may continue to get better, but we basically know what they are right now is just peak uncertainty. And so I want to kind of think about these things that maybe the field isn't necessarily thinking about. And just running back as a whole is kind of one that I think is interesting.
And I think it's a really smart week one idea, because like we're saying, there's all these receivers that are priced down, so many opportunities to save money that it's super easy to just be like, okay, I'm gonna take the running backs that are super good. But there could be builds, like we were just talking about with Diggs and all that. What if Diggs is the one that has a 45-point game in week one and McCaffrey has 25? You know, what if it's Adams? What if it's, you know, whoever? So Tyreek Hill, obviously, needs to be mentioned anytime we're talking about wide receiver ceiling. I think there's going to be a lot of really interesting ways to play it from a tournament perspective to get off sort of those, you know, those redraft focus sort of thoughts that like CMC has to be the one-on-one and you know, Cook and Kamara are right there in the top three. And but yeah, I just want to make that point. The running back receiving thing, the way I think about that, just one more thing I want to say is like everyone knows now how valuable rushing is for quarterbacks. There are still non-rushing quarterbacks that can have ceiling games, but it's a lot harder to get there. Receiving for running backs is like almost a one-for-one perfect analogy for that. Like a guy who can catch a ton of receiving volume, who can have a ton of receiving expected points, you know, in any of those types of models that you're going to look at, that guy is just like a running quarterback. His floor is higher, his ceiling is higher, and someone who does not at the running back position is like an immobile quarterback where he's going to have to hit for multiple touchdowns. He's going to have to hit for a lot of efficiency.
And I think people, and me too, coming into kind of week one and looking at the salaries, right, where we've been doing all these drafts all summer and everything, and we're excited about certain players. And like you said, you know, CMC is your 101. So you put a certain like level of priority basically to where you've been drafting guys, you know, in seasonal leagues or guys you were higher on than the market or whatever. But I think that like there's something to be said for kind of resetting your brain to all of that. You know what I mean? Like, CMC is my 101. It's not even particularly close, you know, with the rest of the field. But that doesn't mean when we come into week one that we can't have these conversations around like, okay, so one guy I tagged again, to our bosses who I'm giving away premium content, but like Raheem Mostert is a cheaper running back that I actually have tagged in lineup HQ. And do I actually know what his workload is going to look like in week one? I have no idea. But it's the same premise of, you know, kind of resetting my brain and thinking about, okay, pivoting into another offense that I'm really bullish on with the 49ers. If they really are as good, you know, even if Jimmy G is playing most of the snaps, if they really are as good as I think that they're going to be on offense, I want to get out in front of that and take my shot, you know, week one on this guy. Now, he's not a rookie or a second year type of breakout,
but he's explosive. Exactly. We're just talking about if you don't catch a lot of passes we don't really know the receiving rules, you got to be efficient. And Raheem Mostert can score from anywhere on the field. So I actually really like that as a take. I would like to play him more early in the season when both are healthy than Trey Sermon.
Yeah.
I'm taking Sermon higher in season long. I think Sermon's going to be pretty good in this offense as well. But Mostert's the guy in DFS that can come out of maybe a suboptimal role. You know, I actually think he'll probably catch more passes than Sermon, but both of them are going to be in terms of suboptimal, in terms of receiving, they're going to be a little bit more of running heavy profiles. So someone who could come out of like the mid pricing tiers with a sort of a suboptimal pass to run sort of touch mix. Mostert would be totally one of the guys that could do that because he has the explosiveness. He has the potential for just splash efficiency. There's not a lot of backs that – I mean, there's literally none. Raheem Mostert has, like, the fastest recorded times in next-gen stats the last couple of years, like the few fastest. This dude is, like, probably more explosive than anyone in the NFL. So I actually really love that.
He had the top two fastest sprint times last year on next. The same guy had the top two, and I believe he was the top fastest 2 years ago too. It was really funny that you bring that up. I listened to Sharp Football Analysis. They have a podcast called Sharp Angles. Anyway, I don't know exactly the podcast title, but they were doing like some crazy random like fun player props that they're betting, and one of the guys apparently this is available, which is a sick sign of our society, but you can bet on who's going to have the fastest time, like the fastest sprint speed in a game this year. And then one guy was like, I'm betting Raheem Mostert, because he does it every single year. He's always the fastest. And honestly, this year is the best year for him to do it. But, you know, it's like being serious for 1 second, he is the kind of guy that's like this perfect kind of, you know, commodulation of all these things where we head into week one with like, how is that backfield going to split up? You know, I was drafting him in round 8 or round 9 of season long leagues. Why am I paying, you know, I think he's 5,800 on DraftKings. Like, why am I paying that? I'm just going to play CMC, whatever. And then it also gives you this kind of unique build where, okay, now maybe I can get Diggs instead of playing, you know, Marquez Callaway, like everybody's going to play Marquez Callaway. And so just little nuances like that are some of the big things.
Right. It's not even that McCaffrey has to bust. It's that your 2v2 has to be better. And if Marquez Callaway doesn't have a great game and Diggs has, you know, basically the same score as McCaffrey, which he can do, obviously. And then Mostert has 25 points or 30 points, which he can if he breaks off, especially if he breaks off a 70-yard TD run, right? That's huge. You're gonna smash those CMC lineups, obviously.
Yeah,
you need a lot of the other cheap receivers to bust too. There's a lot of cheap receivers, so those builds might be tough to leapfrog because some of those cheap receivers are gonna hit.
My brain is gonna hurt on Sunday morning because I'm gonna be going through all these gal brain different thoughts, right? Like, you know, the same thing a lot of people will talk about. Like, I want to flip the build. That was like the first thing that jumped out to me because I'm looking at like, all my favorite players are free. They're all wide receiver. You know, they're all like the rookie, second year, cheap, young wide receivers. And they're all absolutely free in DFS. And I'm like, well, how do I not build that? And you're like, well, everyone else is also thinking that, which in turn makes CMC 1,000,000% owned, Dalvin 1,000,000% owned, Kamara 1,000,000% owned. But then in turn makes Diggs and Tyreek. And like, pick an elite wide receiver. They're low owned. Like, it's that's it, you know, coming into this week one. And so I think that'll be.
Do you think it will be like a thin build flip if you were to do like one of McCaffrey or Kamara and one of like a Diggs Adams? Do you think that will be pretty popular too?
No, I don't. I really don't. I think everyone is going to spend for two or three. So the cash game build, I started to play around with it a little bit. You can so easily play all three of the elite running backs, CMC, Dalvin, and Kamara, because there's, you know, you can kind of do whatever you want at quarterback. There's some cheap guys, right? Like I mentioned, Darnold, Zach Wilson is cheap. Mac Jones is like even cheaper than not that you want to play him, but you know what I mean? We have these options. Kyle Pitts is cheap. I think he's probably going to be the cash game tight end. You know, obviously you can punt off defense and you could literally play three min price wide receivers if you really wanted to. Like you could play Elijah Moore, Rondale Moore, I guess, and Marquez Callaway's not the stone men, but like you could play these guys who, again, we've been drafting in season long leagues, you know, in the eighth round or whatever for months with the top three players in fantasy, you know, so the cash game team really starts to build itself and it's always with those cheap guys. And then people are going to pivot to other cheap wide receivers. But like Diggs was the guy that jumped out to me. You know, we talked about the Bills thing and it was like they play the Steelers, which is not a perceived very good matchup. Josh Allen's a little bit expensive, Diggs is a little bit expensive, and you can't get him with some of those elite running backs. So, you know, whether it's Diggs or maybe you prefer Tyreek Hill or Davante Adams, is it a fascinating one too? If you play Kamara, or maybe you play Kamara and Callaway and you play Davante Adams over Dalvin or CMC, you know, there's just so many fun builds. Like I'm going to go build teams after we're done here, cause I'm getting excited about all these different things that you can do for week one. But it just goes to show you, like, it's not going to be hard to get leverage in not even just week one, week two, week three. It's going to be so easy to kind of get leverage. And so just going in and just jamming the chalk, right? Just playing Marquez Callaway, Kamara, CMC, Dalvin. It's like, you're kind of, you know, you're wasting your time playing DFS because you can make just absolutely incredible lineups early in the season with that are like super, super high leverage.
Yeah. And there's going to be some, you know, maybe we should talk about some of the week one games. I'm looking at them now. It's kind of like first look, but there's some fun stacks. We talked a little bit about the Eagles Falcons, which probably wouldn't even be in my top five here. We talked a little bit about like the Jets Panthers. You talked about the Packers Saints. The Browns are another team that we could see being more forward thinking than people think in terms of the pass rate. They were very pass heavy late last year. I don't think that's been reflected in ADPs in redraft leagues all summer. OBJ, Jarvis Landry have both been pretty easy values. Landry, especially for a guy who's had the target rate that he's had his entire career, it's just sort of a silly value. I don't even end up taking them that often because I'm so heavily targeting the young breakout receivers in my builds, especially in those rounds. But like for the people that like to take, you know, guys that project for targets, when I see them take, you know, these other whoever, you know, Russell Gage ahead of Jarvis Landry, I'm like, what? You don't understand anything. I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm offending somebody right now. I apologize for that. But like, that is insane. But the Browns are a team whose range of outcomes, we think of them as a run heavy team. The range of outcomes certainly includes more pass heaviness. It did that into the postseason. Baker was better. Things were good. They have OBJ back. He reportedly looks amazing. People are saying that, you know, even though he's coming back from the ACL, that he's looking fantastic in practice and looking like his old self, all of these things. Most explosive he's looked and things since he's been in Cleveland, I think, was one of the headlines. So you have all that going in the Browns-Chiefs game. I mean, that's really interesting. You could play the Browns to be more pass-heavy and Tyreek and all that. That could be a really interesting one. Chargers-Washington could be a really interesting one. And just talked about Washington if Herbert comes out hot. I mean, Cardinals Titans even could be a really interesting one, but the Vikings Bengals too. I mean, I think we don't know how Burrow is going to look right away. We talked about a couple of Bengals receivers. Obviously you have Justin Jefferson on the other side. It's in Cincinnati. If Cincinnati can get out to a little bit of a hot start and sort of force Minnesota to throw more, that's not a team that I anticipate being a lot more forward thinking. I think they're going to continue to be sort of old school. But if they're forced into passing a little bit, I think that could be a fun one as well. I mean, there's a lot of games here that are pretty damn interesting.
And, you know, some of these will pick up steam, right? Of course, that's just the nature of the beast. But they can't all pick up steam, right? And I foresee, you know, the Chiefs one is fascinating to me because Tyreek is a guy just I'm super bullish on this year. I don't think he's getting the kind of hype he deserves given the lack of competition for targets, right? He's been kind of just strictly an efficiency player for such a long period of time. And you know, he's a big play guy. But now he's, you know, say whatever you want about Mecole Hardman. I mean, he's not really competing with anyone besides Travis Kelce for targets. Like we could see more, you know, kind of the Kamara thing. It's like Tyreek is the wide receiver version of Kamara to me, that he's always been an efficiency player, big play and high value touch player, and now we have the opportunity for volume that we've never seen before. So it's another thing I would like to get out in front of Tyreek Hill. And so on the flip side, like you said, if the Browns are also not stupid, they have to keep pace with this team. You know what I mean? And so Odell becomes this fascinating tournament play. That's the same thing. I mean, what's Odell going to be, 1% or something? Like nobody's playing Odell. And so even if you're not stacking the game, you get, you know, Odell and Tyreek kind of, you know, secondary correlations. There's so many of those. The Cardinals one also jumps out because same thing. The Cardinals and the Vikings game are both interesting because the Titans are, you know, not the most forward-thinking. They're an efficient offense, but they're not the most forward-thinking offense, obviously, pounding Derrick Henry constantly. But you have A.J. Brown and Julio Jones. If you want to play Derrick Henry, I guess, you know, that's not my thing. But if you want to play Derrick Henry, you know, you have these incredible wide receivers. And the Cardinals might have the worst secondary, you know, at least the worst corners in the NFL. I mean, Malcolm Butler just retired. Malcolm Butler was supposed to be kind of a stopgap at corner for them. And he's you know, not going to be on the team. They're
so you're telling me I can play 100% AJ Brown week one? Because I will do that.
Yes. I'm not recommending 100% T. Higgins because I think he's going to be popular. But AJ Brown is going to be low-owned going against, like, XFL corners.
Low-owned? You're adding this? I didn't even care if he was 50% owned. You're adding low-owned to this? Oh, man.
And facing one of the fastest-paced offenses, that game is wildly interesting to me. And whether you want to play Tannehill or Kyler, or you just play AJ Brown, maybe you know, same thing. There's tons of options to play. You know, do you want to stack a different game and play AJ Brown with Rondale? You know, there's tons of different options. That game and the Vikings game were the most interesting ones to me because projections, like we talked about at the top, are going to factor in those pass rates and run rates for these teams. And so guys like AJ Brown, guys like Justin Jefferson are not going to get the kind of projection and ownership that their ceiling dictates that it does because they don't have good defenses either. And they're playing other good offenses. So like if the game shoots out, who really gives a shit about, you know, your projected run rate or pass rate for those teams? Because if it's 45 to 37 at the end of the game, like you want AJ Brown, you know, you want T. Higgins, you want Justin Jefferson.
And like people are really worried about Julio. He was banged up a little bit in August. He's on a new team. Julio Jones is still obviously very, very good. Another stat I will throw out, though, is targets per out run actually dipped last year. I keep hearing that he didn't fall off at all. His sort of overall efficiency didn't. His profile definitely changed. His yards per target was as high as it's either ever been, or maybe it was the second highest season in his career. Maybe that's the one where it was the highest since his second year when he was a little bit more of a part-time player. I don't have the exact stat in front of me, but he was very efficient on a yards per target basis. Yeah, no, career high yards per target last year. That's not something we should expect at age 32 after he just pulled that off at age 31. That is a little bit of an outlier. What happened on the flip side was that his targets per out run fell about 4 percentage points, which is a significant amount in that stat. First year it had been below 26% since I think his second season. He was down at like 22%. Still very good number, but he used to be a very, very target dominant player. He actually did slip a little bit in that stat last year. AJ Brown took a step forward, was up in like 24%. He was already higher than Julio last year, obviously different offenses and everything. Yeah. But AJ Brown, and that's per route. So that includes the fact that Julio Jones, you know, missed time. We're going to just look at his routes. That's the kind of stat that should show that he was still good, even though he was a little banged up or whatever. He did see a little bit of slippage. Now he's on a new offense. I think he's going to be fine. I think he's going to be good. I think you can double stack if you want to, all of those things. But when you talk about a team in week one facing, you know, there's no corners to cover a number one receiver or anything like that, I would feel a lot more confident just going with AJ Brown and not messing around. I think AJ Brown is a clear – there's more of a gap there, I think, in terms of expected production in my mind than I think the market has it as.
And a guy like Julio, even if he's not demanding the targets – he can open things up for say whatever you want about Corey Davis. I like Corey Davis fine. He had a good year last year. He doesn't command the attention of a defense like Julio Jones does. And so if kind of combining those factors, you think about Julio Jones is still, you know, even if he's a somewhat of a shell of Julio Jones, he's still commanding that attention from a defense on one side that Corey Davis is just not commanding. And so then when you have AJ Brown earning more and more and more targets.
And I want to be clear, he's not a shell. And I don't think you think he's a shell either.
But, no, correct.
Cause he was really efficient last year. I mean, he was still playing very well, but I think especially he's going to command the defensive attention, like you said, but you add in that he wasn't quite drawing targets at the same rate and he's on a new offense and he hasn't played with this quarterback yet. Yeah. AJ Brown has, there's just sort of like little things where I'm like, AJ Brown's going to be the clear one here, and it would not surprise me if he was the top scoring wide receiver in week one at all in that matchup.
And it's just an example, right? Even remove the names. These kinds of things are the things, like this whole entire podcast was about, thinking about these things as we head into week one, because we're going to know really soon, right? Like maybe AJ Brown is, you know, this guy we're drafting at the top of the first round in season long leagues next year, because he's just so dominant and everything comes together for him. The defense is bad, whatever, but we don't know any of this yet, right? We've mentioned a million examples of all this, right? We don't know. We think, you know, Corey Davis drew, you know, targets on 99% of his routes in the preseason. Like, we think maybe that's something that's an indicator, but we haven't seen Elijah Moore. Maybe actually Elijah Moore is for all of camp, we thought Elijah Moore is the best player. The Jets are telling us he's the best player on the offense already, but we didn't get to see him in preseason. Right? It's just, and these are just examples of things that, you know, on Sunday, you and I will be talking about in more detail as it relates to the slate, but I think it's a good thing to kind of get the wheels turning.
And the bigger thing, like to the point about AJ Brown could be the number, you know, the overall wide receiver one, is just a reminder that every week in the NFL there's a lot of variance in the NFL week to week based on like sort of our season long expectations. And so that's a really important thing to consider going into week one. I think it's going to be even more important to consider in week two and week three. Those are some of my favorite ones, because that's the very first time where people get confident in trends, especially after 2 weeks, 3 weeks, they see a trend. There's so many trends that we see for a couple of weeks to start a season that are just like very clearly noise, and then they fall apart, but people are all over them. We're going to have opportunities going into week three, week four, and those ranges before things really start to kind of stabilize over a month and over a month and a half and like a 6 week span, where we're going to be able to leverage 1 week samples and 2 week samples, which are going to be great. But that's a good thing to keep in mind going into week one as well. Go back and look at the top weekly scores at different positions. You know, go to, you know, some data site and pick out a week and see who the top receiver was that week or top running back. It's probably going to surprise you. Some weeks it's the huge name. Some weeks it's, you know, it was some random players at times, right? And that can happen in week one right away. I mean, it very well can. So, especially when you can do whatever you want with pricing, you're talking about a lot of these types of plays like the AJ Brown thing being low owned potentially. I mean, I don't want to get too hung up on him. I don't want people to all want to go play him because he's just an example of the broader thing. There are a lot. If he's even, you know, 15%, I probably won't play him because there's going to be so many opportunities to be at single digits, you know?
Yeah. And he is. He's just one example of tons of these opportunities that are presented to you in week one, right? We didn't even talk about some of the guys that we're like bullish on for this season, whether it be Antonio Gibson or DeAndre Swift, or, you know, we didn't talk about the 49ers wide receivers. We didn't talk about, there's so, and like, if you played them, I would be like, yep, that's fine. You know, that looks good to me. But you know, that's just how many opportunities are presented to you. And like you said, not even just in week one, you know, in week two, we're going to have the same conversation. We're going to be like, dude, 2 weeks ago, we were drafting whatever T. Higgins in the fourth round. And okay, he went 3 for 45 in week one. That doesn't change anything about T. Higgins, right? And so it's just a reminder about this early season. So it's gotten me excited. So as we wrap up, you just got to pull up the week one slate. One conviction call play could be an individual, and it can't be A.J. Brown. So I'm prefacing it with that.
Because that was going to be it.
non-A.J. Brown, who is like the first guy that you're like, based on everything we've talked about here, like ownership, all that kind of stuff, who's the first guy that kind of jumps out to you?
I'll say Alpha Kamara outscores Christian McCaffrey. I think that's a pretty solid conviction play.
I like it.
In New Orleans, over under a 50. Panthers game, Jets in Carolina is only at 45. I do think he makes some good points about McCaffrey potentially, especially in week one. I think Kamara going in, like with the way that everything's trended, them just cutting Latavius Murray, they're not going to be completely confident in Tony Jones yet. We're going to see a big snap share out of Kamara. They are starting Jameis. We don't know how much Taysom's going to play, but you have to think that, you know, that helps the pass rate. That might not stick all year. That's kind of a problem for Kamara in season-long potentially. I think in week one, they're going to give Jameis a little bit of a leash. He earned the job. They named him the starter pretty early, you know, a couple weeks ago. I thought it would be like in this last week almost that they were like still kind of toying with that or trying to throw off their week one opponent. So I think things are just setting up really, really nice, especially for Kamara in the first month. McCaffrey might be a little bit slow to build back to his massive workload, like you said. Yeah, I mean, I haven't dug in a ton, but I think that is going to be one that we could probably leverage a little bit to have some Kamara Diggs lineups and no McCaffrey.
I love that. So piggybacking, it's also perfect that you said Diggs. I'm going to combine, if we're making a team right now with these hot takes, CMC is going to be your fade of the elite because Kamara is the guy that you want. In turn, we're going to leverage CMC with the Panthers are the new Bills and Sam Darnold is the new Josh Allen and DJ Moore is the new Stephon Diggs. Okay. So you want CMC is the chalk running back. And so you're going to leverage off of him with the passing game. We can even throw in, you bring it back with Elijah Moore. And you got your Kamara, Darnold, DJ.
I mean, I'm definitely building this lineup. It might not have Darnold necessarily because I'm not quite as stoked about Darnold.
Don't be a coward.
But it will have DJ Moore and it will have Kamara and it will have a Diggs or a Hill. I mean, that's a great lineup, I think.
Yeah, so that's kind of where I'm headed. I think that this was a really good it was a fun conversation for me too, but it was a really good, I think, kind of just way to get, like I said, get the juices flowing, get the wheel spinning for people heading into week one in a little bit different manner than, you know, slate breakdowns or DFS 101s or whatever. And so, yeah, that is it for this. We will be back on Sunday morning on rotogrinders.com from, I don't even know what you're out in the freaking West Coast. It's like, you know, 6 a.m. for you or whatever, you know, but from 11:30 to 12:30 Eastern, we will be live on rotogrinders.com leading you up to lock every single Sunday. So if you don't like young players and you like running backs, we are probably going to be annoying you, but I feel confident that these kinds of conversations will be super helpful. Ben, is there anything you got going over these next couple of days that you need to put out there? Stealing Signals, Stealing Bananas, anything?
Yep, the Stealing Signal Substack, BenGreshot.substack.com. It's like $8 a month. Every week I do a full recap on Mondays and Tuesdays of every game, highlight the signals and the noise. I wrote it at Roto Grinders a couple of years ago, back when I was doing the big Fantasy Insider stuff, RIP, Fantasy Insiders. But yeah, no, that's going to be, I know a lot of DFS players that really like that. I text with a lot of them and stuff. It's a really good early week way for them, I know, to recalibrate player value, understand what kind of stuff was more noisy and we can maybe leverage in the forward, you know, going forward. And then what kind of stuff is these signals of new trends that we want to be on early, even catch them maybe before they've manifested in a lot of fantasy points. So that's a big one. I won't be doing that a lot in, you know, the next couple of weeks, but starting on Monday and Tuesday after week one, I'll be hammering those articles out. So
awesome. Yeah. Make sure you, I will be reading intently for sure. And I will probably be questioning Ben about his takes on Sunday mornings, but that's going to wrap it up for us, guys. Again, we will see you on Sunday mornings on Roto Grinders. And for me, and for Ben, and for DJ Moore, and Sam Darnold, and Alvin Kamara, we will see you guys in just a few days.